everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. Big Friday episode, big news day, big garbage can trashy day, because I'm already looking forward to our garbage people of the week. Brett Ehrlich, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, John. I'm doing as fine as someone can under the circumstances. My president is very audibly dying.
Yes. Yes. Audibly dying. Audibly also, your mic is okay, Brooke. Don't worry about that. But anyway, yeah, we're gonna be doing a little. We're on lung watch day lung. Six. I think we're gonna check in on the evidence that we have there. Very exciting stuff. I'm getting some errors here. Anyway, I'm very excited to have you here though, because we have to talk about this presidential commission that has been setting up. We're gonna give a little bit of an update about the whole militia thing. We've got some NDAs. We're gonna touch base with, we're gonna talk about the election, but not focused on Donald Trump. There's obviously a lot of other elections that are going on right now. So that's gonna be exciting. For those of you who are already watching, whether it's on YouTube or Twitch or literally wherever it is, please hit the like button and share the stream so that people know that we're live. Other things that you need to know though, there are several. One, we have had a Twitter for the Damage Report for like 2 years, but we had not had an Instagram up until yesterday. Now we do. It is, you're gonna wanna write this down because it's hard. It's Instagram.com/TheDamageReport. And you can see it there. We've already got some stuff up. There's gonna be some dog pics coming up soon. Very excited about that. In addition to the Instagram, Shop TYT, which also has its new Will You Shut Up Man shirt that I hear is very popular. You can buy it at shoptyt.com and use code BABY to get 15% off. Also has a Damage Report t-shirt. Now you've known about that. You knew that we were trying to sell enough so that we'd get a Dragon Squad design for Monday. But did you also know that because there was such a good reception of the first shirt, they have added the options for a long sleeve t-shirt and a hoodie. It's now up on shoptyt.com. Go take a look at it.
I just want to say something. Pretty certain. So is it the zip up hoodie or like the like sweatshirt hoodie?
I'm going to find out right now.
I just want to say this. The TYT.
It's not zip up. It's a pullover hoodie, which I'm much.
Oh my God. I will tell you that I will say in all situations, every TYT hoodie I've ever had is magic. So the pullover hoodies, if it's the same one they had for Pop Trigger, like they had some Pop Trigger ones left over and someone was like, hey, do you want to, I don't know, do you want to have a hoodie? And we were like, seven please. And we have three Pop Trigger hoodies. This weekend, we did a road trip where we were both sitting next to each other wearing Pop Trigger hoodies. I wake up, I put it on. Mm-hmm. And even if it was the zip up one, that's like its whole other brand of magic. I just want to say Tamara and the squad at the Dragon Squad at Shop TYT, that's sacrilege, are killing it with the hoodie game, period. And I know Jesus was involved in that in the early days, so it might be like Jesus stuff left over, but either way.
Totally.
Very nice. Totally. Well done, Dragon Squad.
Yeah, very excited about that. And I know the audience is excited. I'm just looking to see what that design that we're gonna hopefully unveil on Monday is gonna be. Hopefully we'll have the design for Monday morning so that we can show people it. But anyway, I will just say this. We met the challenge that Shop TYT gave to us. But I will say, just as a general rule, obviously, having the shirts is objectively cool in its own way, but the better these initial TDR things do, then it's gonna send a strong signal to them that they should make more and more of our stuff. We'll see cool designs and everything. So I really want TDR clothing merch on the Shop TYT to be like the best selling stuff. A strong signal to Cenk that he should have pushed for this years ago. So I'm gonna throw that challenge down.
I think it's a great challenge. And it's like sometimes people issue challenges that I think are impossible. I think this is wildly possible.
I think it's wildly possible.
Level three escalating to level five hype train possible because there is a hype train currently
it is.
In progress.
For full disclosure though, I do want to reassure the audience of two things. One, that yes, eventually we will be talking about the news, but two, I don't in any way get any money for anything that's sold on Shop TYT or anything like that. Also, a reminder, super chats don't go to me, do they go to the network? Sure. I make this guarantee to you. There is nothing I can do that will ever result in me making any money ever. So just bear that in mind. I don't get anything for anything.
What's in it for you, John?
Nothing.
I'm excited about it, but it has nothing to do with my own financial situation. It's just kind of cool and I'm excited.
I'll tell you.
Anyway,
I just want to thank people for the bits. Truman Batigi, you bastard. That's the name of someone, but it's spelled like a sheep. Hedora 89 for the subs. And then the other one. I'm sure you'll get to all the comment affiliated cheer later.
Yeah, I'm just gonna read one Twitch comment and then we're gonna go into the news. And I only say this because of the argument we had before the show this morning. Norma made an awesome introductory 9-image thing for our Instagram page. And I already see a comment, Instagram needs 2 more posts. The 9-post image is kind of broken. Yeah, but it was cool while it lasted. So anyway.
Don't even get me started.
I don't want to get Brett going. He hates that more than the single thing.
More of a threat to the United States than coronavirus is people who decide it's a good idea to post 9-image mosaics. No one's ever thought it's cool. Everyone is like, why? I followed you. Why is it just a shoulder?
Okay, Norma, it is awesome. I love it. Anyway, with that, why don't we start off, Brett, with something a little bit fun? How about that? We got serious stuff that's coming.
I'm not gonna do the show after the. I didn't know this was a 9-image mosaic show, so I'm just gonna go.
Okay, okay. Well, then I will talk about. Oh, you don't want to be on Lung Watch? Okay, then you won't be on Lung Watch. Okay, let's talk about this now. Donald Trump assures us that he is feeling great. He is a perfect physical specimen. His words, not mine or literally anyone else who's ever met him. And he's ready to start doing rallies very soon. The thing is, he called into Sean Hannity last night, and maybe this is analyzing too closely, but there were a few instances where he didn't sound like he was 100% over this thing. Here's the first.
Well, I didn't even want to use them. You know, last time I had a big problem. They oscillated my mics when I had the one debate. We had 3 debates with Hillary, and on I think the first debate, on the first debate, they oscillated the mic. And they oscillated it very, very seriously.
No, I think they oscillated his lungs there. I think.
Just the inherent irony. Very many things to talk about, but the first is just recognize what's going on here. He is complaining about people cutting his mic while he himself has to cut his own mic because he can't get through a sentence without coughing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, oh, really fast. So this is a warning for the rest of this segment because we're gonna have another video for you. I understand that, look, to some extent, we're just having fun. Some people might say, hey, it sounds like you're having fun with the fact that he might have some lingering issues. And I have heard those criticisms. I will respond by saying that yesterday, he continued his long 7-month crusade to convince people to believe and do things that will cause him to be killed during this pandemic by saying that if you get this, you get a little bit sick, you don't need drugs, you just get better and then you're immune so nobody worry about it. That is gonna lead to more of his followers dying. So I don't care, I'm done with this whole thing. If I wanna have a little bit of fun because he might have some lingering lung problems, I'm just gonna do that. That's not as bad as wishing death on seniors, which is what he's doing every single day. Now, it's one thing that he muted his mic, Brett, you're 100% right and it is ironic considering the context. For me, it's not that he muted his mic, it's how fast he muted his mic. Like, think about if you need to mute your mic and you don't have it right in front of your face, you have to go, you have to click on the thing. But he was ready to do it, which implies to me that he had thought about it or had need of it earlier. He was like forewarned about that.
Yeah, because he's been coughing, because in his 5-minute video to prove while caked in like burnt sienna, or as Brooke calls it, burnt cantaloupe makeup. He couldn't get through a 5-minute speech without needing a cut to very obviously cough. They know that that's a situation, and there's a cough button that they actually give you when you're doing radio quality mics in studio. So he probably has a cough button in front of him, but people only rarely use that when they need to sneeze or they're doing something else. But it is amazing that he is trying to advocate for an in-person rally situation and an in-person debate situation when he very obviously can't get through an interview without hacking up a lung.
Yeah, totally, totally. And so look, that was the first bit. Here's the second instance.
Will you encourage your supporters to get out and vote early?
Well, I want them to vote, but I will say this, absentee is okay. Because absentee ballots excuse me, absentee ballots are fine.
Okay, so we left in just enough of the video of where he was lying about absentee versus mail-in ballots. But yeah, he's coughing, and here's the thing, that's totally reasonable. He had and continues to have a respiratory infection. I'm just saying that I'm being reasonable by saying that it's expected and indeed just fine that he's still having some issues. He is the one that wants you to believe that he is totally fine and in fact immune, and COVID's never fought a warrior like him and all that stuff. No, he's still sick. He's sick right then. He's sick right now as I'm filming this.
He's a predator. That's what it is. He is saying, no, 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 don't mind that open sore on my junk. Let's do it. Like, that's what he's saying. That's what's happening. I don't hate, people might hate that I'm making it so gross, but that's exactly what's happening. This is a deadly disease that has killed 200 and now 14,000 people. It's come to the point where we used to be like, okay, what's the exact thousand? And now we're like 210, and I'll tell you again at 220,000 people. That's how much it is. It's getting to like, you must get up very early in the morning to kill that many people kind of, you know, at this point, like it's terrible.
Totally.
But it's very frustrating that the president is trying to say things like, I don't think I'm contagious. Let me go out there and do these things. And I think what's happening in the minds of the American people is they're realizing that Donald Trump can't control the coronavirus in his own White House, let alone the entire country. And those things that folks had been fighting us on, they're now coming around to. All the way down to, if you watch TYT's main show today, we're gonna cover how people in the villages, the ones who once would go around in their golf carts saying Donald Trump is infallible, are now like, actually, I'm gonna park this golf cart near my house and stay inside because it turns out coronavirus is real.
Exactly, yeah, 100%. There have been a lot of questions that I personally would love answered. I think a lot of Americans would have loved answered over the past couple of weeks about Trump's taxes, the state of the uterus collector at ICE detention facilities, all of those things, who actually motivated the white supremacist terrorists to try to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer. These are all great questions, but there's one that has actually been asked of Trump administration officials repeatedly over the past week and a half, and they simply will not answer. And I'm gonna give you a great example of that. So this is Holly Jackson on her show with White House spokesman Brian Morgenstern, asking him a very simple, very important question. When was Donald Trump's last negative test before the debate with Biden last week? And here is his attempt to evade responsibility in this area.
Of that, you don't know or you don't wanna say?
So we don't have that. I don't personally know.
Right, and what does that mean? Have you asked, Brian? Rules. I think Wednesday you said you're gonna look into that.
So Hallie, the president doesn't check all of his HIPAA rights at the door just when he becomes president.
So it's a privacy thing then, the reason why you're not seeing the last negative test, HIPAA?
So that is one reason. The fact of the matter is, there's a reason to share certain information. It's to prevent further transmission of the virus. It's public health purposes, and that's what we're doing.
Got it. But you just said a couple of minutes ago that you would share the results of this PCR test today if you get it and if that happens. So what's the difference? Why not be more transparent with people about this last negative test? You know there is a public health reason for this, and it impacts the people who were potentially exposed to the virus before the president was diagnosed. Why not be transparent about that specific, very specific piece of information?
So Hallie, I stated we'll have further updates from the doctors. We've had updates from the doctors every single day.
You are Hallie, not the, saying when the president's last negative test was. Let's be clear about that. Let me ask someone else.
But the president was socially distanced from people. Certainly, you focused a lot on the New Jersey event. Everybody there said he was never within six feet of anybody.
Brian, we have video. We know the president wasn't socially distanced from everybody.
But that's not true. We've seen video of the president over the weekend, Brian. We have eyeballs.
Let me ask you this. Did the president at least comply with the Cleveland Clinic debate requirements to be negative tested in the 72 hours prior to that debate? Was that
the president focused on looking backwards? The president is very interested in getting back on the campaign trail.
I'm very focused on getting an answer to this question, Brian, and I think a lot of people are.
As soon as he is not going to be transmitting the virus, we will have information on that. He is excited to do it.
Got it. So as for the last debate, the 72-hour requirement to test negative, did the president comply with that? Yes or no?
Hallie, we are looking at how the president can get out there without transmitting the virus. And that's what we're going
to do. That is not the question that is in front of you, Brian. So you don't, do you not have an answer? I just want to be clear. I know. Again. Yes or no? Do you have an answer?
Allie, and if you don't, just say you don't have an answer. You've got time to talk to the White House about very important issues. Let's talk about how we want to help people get through this virus with more stimulus that the speaker seems to ignore. She's now talking about the 25th Amendment because she couldn't get the president with impeachment.
Well, that is not actually the topic of this conversation,
Let's talk
Brian,
about
because as
serious
you know,
issues.
Nope. All right, Brian, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
Yeah, she's good.
Hallie Jackson has been, has been my news crush for quite some time. She used to sit next to like John Roberts in the front of the White House, like press briefings, and just like stare him down, like, oh, I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing. So she's in my news crush. She just had a baby. It's very happy family, whatever. But I do want to say this. There was a lot to talk about in that, but the one that really jumped out to me is when he finally goes, Hallie, you're really preoccupied with looking back. Okay. Trump is still talking about Hillary Clinton's emails.
Yeah.
That is something that he, as of what, yesterday, got mad at Bill Barr for not being able to act on. He's saying, go arrest Hillary Clinton. You won that for it's been an entire election cycle. And maybe he's on, that's his cycle when he turns into a total monster and he's got blood coming out of his whatever. But come on, that is not a valid excuse.
Yeah.
And the reason he doesn't want you to look back is because of how terribly the Trump administration has obviously failed in all of this. We have that graphic we always keep going back to where the EU has had way fewer infections and positive tests than the United States have, despite having 30% more people.
Yeah, that was awful. I mean, any one of those, like we kept, that's like the longest video we've played on the show in months and months because it was just so much and we were cutting out a lot too. But he wouldn't answer. He obviously wouldn't answer. He said he would get the information days ago. He's obviously not gonna do that. No one will answer. So it's on us to say, okay, this is the evidence we have. What is likely to be true? Since they won't let us know what's true, what's likely to be true? And what's likely to be true is one of two things, neither good. Either he was tested in the 72 hours before the debate and he tested positive, but did it anyway, which you might think, well, it couldn't possibly be that. He's not a psychopath, but have you been awake for the past few years? Or he just doesn't get tested and they've been lying about him getting tested. Maybe he doesn't like the thing going up his nose. I don't know, whatever. But he hadn't actually done it for at least 3 days beforehand. And they don't want to go on the record as saying something that's not true. One of those two things is true. Both are so incredibly irresponsible towards Joe Biden that I would say Joe Biden, no matter what happens, should not do an in-person debate with Donald Trump. No matter what precautions or requirements in testing or whatever, Trump will lie about it. He won't comply with it. That is not a hypothetical. It's already the case. That's the best case scenario from the last time. And I will simply say about his evasions, as a representative of the Trump administration, there are basically two kinds. There are ones who break and ones who don't break. And he's one of the ones that can't help but smile when he lies a certain number of times. He started smiling multiple times because he's not 100% a sociopath. And he gets that what he's doing is incredibly dishonest. And he gets that she gets what he's doing. And he can't help but smile about that situation. And that makes him not as good at his job as someone like Kayleigh McEnany, or especially the queen of not breaking would be Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Yeah.
Good God. It's so dishonest.
Oh, by the way, can I add one thing to the that 3 day period? So is it that he hadn't been tested at all, or is it that he tested positive? Let's get a little bit more evidence possibly towards he actually tested positive. And it's this. You remember, he arrived late to the debate and couldn't be tested. Now that is, no matter what, that's irresponsible, right? But does it make sense to arrive late to a debate that you'd want to prep for and get comfortable for and all of that, that you went to this city to do, that you'd be late to that venue? Or does it make sense that you'd be late if you really don't want to take that test because you know what it's going to say?
There are so, and that's not the only interpretation of the chain of events that's incriminating, like, and against the Trump administration, and saying that he's not taking it seriously. A, he's admitted that he had intentionally downplayed it. B, his entire entourage took their masks off as soon as they got there. C, the entire White House is flooded with disease on a timeline that matches what you put out. It doesn't make any sense for any reason other than, and today he's trying to blame Gold Star families for him getting sick. He is trying That's crazy. That event that led to the illness of a high ranking, I think it's Coast Guard official, who is now, like, you know, in intensive care or whatever. He's trying to say that the Gold Star families loved him so much that they wanted to get so close and give him kisses. That that's why he got sick. It's from, and Gold Star families are the families of fallen soldiers.
Yeah,
that's it.
That's and that's like of president. All of the people he could blame. That's insane. That is crazier than anything Obama said in 8 years.
And that's why
we wouldn't have gotten to it if Brett hadn't brought it up.
And that's why, exactly. Reminder, it's been a week since we found out he paid $750 in taxes. One week. And before that, nothing. Like 1 week. That's like bare naked ladies 1 week.
It's exactly like that.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
While claiming that it has absolutely nothing to do with Donald Trump, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Congressman Jamie Raskin, who's been on the program several times, introduced a bill today to form a commission that would rule on the president's fitness for office in order to, quote, enable Congress to help ensure effective and uninterrupted leadership in the presidency. This is being called the Commission on Presidential Capacity to Discharge the Powers and Duties of Office. And it would be the body and process called for the 25th Amendment to the US Constitution. So what does that mean? The body that would do that. So the 25th Amendment, which has been talked about a lot in the past few years, though probably not enough, provides the procedure for the vice president to take over the duties of the president in case of his death, resignation, or inability to perform his duties. But specifically, the amendment says that when the vice president and a majority either of cabinet officials or of such other body as Congress may by law provide determine that the president's unable to discharge blah blah blah, then the vice president shall take over the duties of president. So that body hasn't really been defined. Hypothetically, it could have just been Congress itself, but they're saying this will be the body that the Constitution is specifically talking about, and it's not about Trump. Nancy Pelosi says not about Trump. He'll face the judgment of voters. But he shows the need to create a process for future presidents. Well, she's talking about setting a precedent there. Brett, what do you think about this? The politics of it right now and how it might play out long term.
So there's two videos that you can pull from. One is her teasing that she's going to be talking about the 25th Amendment, which is quite powerful and amazing. And like she's in the middle of talking about stimulus. She's like, by the way, come back tomorrow because we're going to be talking about the 25th Amendment. Thank you. All right. Just going to leave it there and I'm going to go back to stimulus. Today was she literally says civics lesson. And I wanted to pound my head against a table. And I love Congressman Raskin. He goes through like the specifics of it, And they keep saying stuff like, they keep going like, this is not about the president. But what is missing from it is video of Nancy Pelosi, and she needs to create this, of her saying, in a way that is very obviously sarcastic, saying, listen, this isn't about the president. You know, we didn't think of it until the president made such crazy, illogical decisions based on potentially being incapacitated by a steroid that he admitted to being on, which we know causes psychosis. We looked around and said, you know what? It turns out we don't have any protocol for anything this wildly unprecedented. Mm-hmm. We don't know. That's why the 25th Amendment happened after Kennedy was shot. There was no way to replace the vice president after that. We needed something to come in. But then they get so into the weeds. I'm very grateful that that despite their inability to generate something that is that replayable, the media has picked up on why they did it, which is president's a little over the top. He's made some wildly terrible decisions because of what I just said. And I think that Pelosi's trying to troll him pretty hard right now and just remind people and do play some offense to say the president is not capable of being president. He's also putting everyone in the line of succession at risk. So we got to reevaluate at this point.
Yeah. It was definitely a great opportunity. Like, it's, you know, just want to be very clear. It's not because the president was on Fox News last night saying that California dumps water in the ocean to save little fishies. It's not that. It's not that. And you could just go through a litany of all the crazy things that he said. It's not because he talks about windmills giving you cancer and does this little thing where he goes, wee. It's not about that.
30 times in a row yesterday.
Exactly. You could do all that. But anyway, on the actual substance of this, look, we do need to have a procedure for the 25th Amendment. That said, I don't like this. I like Jamie Raskin. Jamie Raskin's a pretty good congressman. Him being involved in it sways me a little bit. And by the way, he's been consistent about this. This is not the first time that he's brought this up. He's worked on it in the past. In 2017, he did. Now, granted, that's still Trump times, but I don't like the idea that something like this could be set up in the future to try to like say that Obama wore a tan suit, so he's clearly crazy. Like, I don't trust it. Having the cabinet be the ones who make the decision means that in reality it'll never happen. But that at least seems to fit in with what the Constitution is trying to get at least. I don't want some future, you know, I don't want the Republican House to decide that President AOC wore a lipstick that was too bright, so we gotta get rid of her.
Yeah.
And that is how I feel like this ends up going.
I agree. I had the same thought. For some reason, I thought about like, when gunpowder was invented, it was for fireworks. You know, it was to make the sky pretty, and that's Democrats. We're gonna do this thing, and the only thing I can think of right now is it makes the sky pretty. And Republicans are like, how can I shoot stuff with it? How? Exactly. And that's exactly what's gonna happen with this commission.
Yeah.
Which won't pass and won't carry over into the next thing. They'll abandon it. But that's why I think the idea is great to tell people like, to try to, and it feels like they're doing an impression of McConnell, which is like, you know, there's processes in place that we're just following. Mm-hmm. More like, there's nothing in here, whatever. But it doesn't have that. I am very, you know, it isn't obvious enough what conclusions people should draw from it just by looking at it on its face. That's the same criticism I have for people on the left with terms like defund the police and versus the way that the Republicans are able to come up with things that are very easily digestible without seeming offensive on their face.
Yeah. Yeah. Trump wants to reassure the nation that he is feeling well. And because last night with Sean Hannity did not go well, he's gonna have another go at it on Fox News tonight. Tonight, he is going to be evaluated medically by Dr. Mark Siegel. Now we're gonna get to Mark Siegel in just a minute to give you an idea of who he's at. Just briefly, Brett, him going on Fox News to be medically evaluated by one of their toadies. What do you think about that as a strategy?
So he's gonna get a physical from Fox News. He's been getting a physical from Fox News since he started running for president, because John Arrett, his face palm knows exactly where we're going. Because the entire experience has been of Fox News gently cupping his balls and telling him, you cough, it's fine. And I'll tell you it's fine. Like, they're literally gonna cup his ball. They're figuratively going to cup Trump's balls. They're figuratively going to cup Trump's balls while he literally coughs.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I want to know if it's live, because my guess is it won't be live. It'll be a pre-taped package, so to speak. And
ew.
And all we're asking for is the actual diagnoses. And they're going to do this thing that they always do, where it's a fake test that doesn't really reveal anything. And they're going to just try to repeat falsehoods until they become true.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up the live versus pre-taped. I honestly hadn't thought about that. It's 100% going to be pre-taped. They're not going to allow him to cough even once in that thing. Maybe I could be wrong. We'll see. I did know exactly where that was going. And I know that our audience has gotten a lot bigger during the pandemic. We shot past 500,000 subs on YouTube. Thank you for that.
No big deal.
I just want to reassure you, there was a time where Brett and I were professional individuals. We wore shirts that button up and things like that.
Underpants.
I don't know. We occasionally, well, I can only speak for me.
Ever.
We've fallen apart over the past 7 months. And if this pandemic goes on much longer, I don't know what's going to be left. I think that we're outdoor cats now. I don't think we can live inside again. Anyway, so Mark Siegel is the one who is going to check him. Now, why? Is it because Mark Siegel is the best COVID related doctor? No. According to Sophie and Mercer's research, he has appeared on Fox News since January 20th of this year 297 times. That's amazing. That's more than every day. So that's why he's checking him out. It's because it's the guy that Trump knows from watching Fox News. He's the doctor, I believe, from the person, woman, man, camera, TV thing, isn't he, yes. Brett?
Yes.
Yeah, that's why he's, because Trump likes him. And so here's what you need to know about Mark Siegel, other than the fact that he apparently lives in a broom closet in Fox Studios. During the critical early days of the pandemic in March, Siegel repeatedly compared COVID-19 to the flu and said concern about the pandemic was being exaggerated to attack President Donald Trump politically. Then he became among the first Fox personalities to push hydroxychloroquine as a supposed miracle treatment. So he said that 214,000 deaths ago, I'm sure he's learned a lot since then. Let's see, on March 6th though, he said the worst case scenario is for the coronavirus to be the flu. That is about as wrong as you could have possibly been. That same day, he said it's all political. On April 24th, he used antibody data to claim that the hospitalization rate and the death rate especially is way much lower than what we thought it was. Much lower, way, way much lower. On July 7th, he said schools need to reopen because the risk to teachers is so much lower than it is to doctors. That has not saved many teachers' lives since then. He pushed for hydroxychloroquine. He agreed with Tucker Carlson that the media is criticizing hydroxychloroquine just because they're calling it a conspiracy theory because Trump is related to it. Continued tests have shown that it doesn't actually do anything. Cited flawed studies, but he doesn't get in trouble for that. Just a couple of weeks ago, he said that if you're under 70, it's almost impossible you're gonna die from COVID-19. That is wildly irresponsible. He has been wrong from the very beginning. He continues to be wrong to the present day. And tonight is probably gonna be the cherry on the top of the wrong cake that he's making. I don't know.
It is, I mean, I've worked, let me give you some behind the scenes of how TV works. There was a time when I, a 25-year-old idiot, had my first encounter with like live TV punditry. And it was because the company I worked at was close to CNN's building and they knew we would do it no matter what. So AJ Hammer would have a producer call me and say, here's something vaguely political associated with pop culture. Can you please be an expert on it in 10 minutes in our studio? And I would have to drive over there, park, run in a studio. I'd see it for the first time and have to react.
Yeah.
And it takes the kind of desperation I had as a 25, 26-year-old to really understand the kinds of people and that will take this job and run with it. And the reason Fox has hired this guy is he will make the doctor a quote thing, the same way it's Judge Reinhold, he's Dr. Siegel. That's what they're taking advantage of. And he's not, he might be have been a real doctor at some point, but it is very obvious that he is as much a doctor as Whoopi Goldberg is a nun in the movie Sister Act.
I mean, she wore the right outfit. She does.
He's gonna pull out a stethoscope. I want to show that doctor that's going to be assisting, and it's just a stock image of like a baby with one of those big reflector lights on their head.
Okay. The easy prediction is that he will wear a stethoscope. The tougher one is, will Trump wear a stethoscope? He apparently, he specializes in internal medicine and treats conditions such as influenza, according to his faculty biography. So look, that is closer to COVID related than like Scott Atlas is, obviously, by a country mile. But still, he's not an expert on COVID. There's no indication that he's actively treating cases of COVID. And how could he? He's on Fox right now, and he has been all year. But anyway, he is going to be testing out Trump. There is no, like, what is the point of that? He's going to say Trump could beat up John Cena if he wanted to right now. Like, there's no outcome that isn't Trump is in better physical condition than Dr. Manhattan. Like, it just, that's the only way this story can end.
I mean, it's all in line with how he staffed his entire cabinet. It's people that work counter to the profession doing things that are in charge of the entire industry. That's the problem. And the last little bit of it is every other doctor hates the doctors on Trump's Fox News team. Every other lawyer hates the lawyers on Trump's news team, because what Trump has done is really undercut like the proud, silent nobility of most working people. That they're like, listen, folks, a lot of folks that are lawyers within the government are just like, I want to do a good job. Like, I want to be, or like work with like career bureaucrats. A lot of them are like, I could be making so much more money in the private sector, but I took this job because I do want to help people. And for Trump, that's never, ever a possibility. For him, it's always, what's the next grift? How can I take advantage of it? And he's projecting that onto everyone. And in the meantime, rewarding folks that act just like him by giving them the spotlight. And in so doing, really systematically unweaving the fabric of democracy.
Just, I mean, you're 100% right. Just the idea that he chooses these people, especially doctors, especially during a pandemic, based on having seen them on Fox News telling him what he wants to hear. Like, it's like charming Smaug level grift, and it works. It works 100% of the time. Barr wrote that big letter about how Trump was awesome. Like, getting Trump to like you is the easiest thing imaginable. It's not tough at all. He should be like, shouldn't like a supposed alpha male strongman be a little bit more discerning about people who are blatantly manipulating him? But he's not. He has no radar for it. For some time now, there has been a lot of mystery swirling around Donald Trump's trip to Walter Reed Medical Facility at the end of last year. Much of it driven by the fact that it seemed to be done as sort of a last minute emergency thing, but then was later pitched as having been a physical, even though Trump has at other points said that he was doing his physical at a different time. And the fact that he became very defensive about having not had any mini strokes when nobody was talking about mini strokes. All of it's weird. It just got a little bit weirder with this new reporting from NBC. So during that trip, which took place on November 16th, 2019, Trump mandated signed NDAs from both physicians and non-medical staff, most of whom are active duty military service members. At least two doctors at Walter Reed who refused to sign the NDAs were subsequently not permitted to have any involvement in the president's care. So Trump and the White House have since claimed that that unscheduled hospital trip was nothing more than a routine checkup. But unlike his 2017 and 2018 annual physical, employees at Walter Reed did not get staff-wide notice about the president's visit, nor was any public announcement made prior to the visit. And here's the thing about those NDAs. Anyone providing medical services to the president or any other American is automatically prohibited by federal law from disclosing the patient's personal health information without consent. The existing legal protection for all patients under the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA, raises the question of why he would add NDAs. It is already a federal crime to give that information. And they have to have Yankee White security clearance. There's already so many layers of them being vetted. He added one extra. And there's no sign yet that NDAs were required in 2017 or 2018. This seems like a new added thing that they didn't want anyone coming near Trump during that trip who wouldn't sign one of those.
I wonder if it adds an extra layer of potential civil action that can be taken by the president to sue the doctor specifically if they personally sign an NDA to him. Maybe. And fail to live up to it. Because otherwise he'd be suing Walter Reed Medical Center, and that doesn't look too good. Even though he has attacked Gold Star families in the past and in the present, people affiliated with veterans. But that is,
yeah,
that's all I can think of. And it's so stupid for this reason, for this exact reason, for stories like this to come out. Because someone who didn't sign it now gets to talk about it. Because now it's not a discussion of of Trump's medical condition, which, as you pointed out, is already illegal. It's a discussion of something that is unrelated to the actual medical act of diagnosis or treatment or cure or care. And now they can say, yeah, someone just came up to me with a piece of paper. Here's what it said on it. I can talk about it because I didn't sign it, nor was I officially in negotiations to do so.
In this sort of situation, I know Trump's are probably a different case than most. What do you think? Do you think that as one of the stipulations for the NDA, you're forbidden to talk about the fact that you signed the NDA?
Yes, that's in every NDA as well. And the reason I said what I just said about being in negotiations to do so is frequently you're not allowed to talk about like the process if you're earnestly engaged in it. So that's to prevent people from being down the road in a negotiation, kicking out and saying, oh, here's everything that happened in that negotiation.
Okay.
You're frequently prohibited. I mean, I have some, but I don't want to bring them out because I'd probably violate them. But you're frequently prohibited from any discussion of the process or the contents of the NDA, and frequently the existence of the NDA. And that's just from my personal experience with NDAs, which we have I've used for other reasons.
Interesting.
John.
Anyway, okay, yes. So
what? No, let's talk about it. Let's talk about what I've non-disclosed. We can, but it's weird. Your lawyers would probably come after me.
Okay. I do have many.
We can talk about the retainers.
I do have a retainer, but it's for his line. Anyway, I'm not wearing right now.
All over the office.
No, I don't. You wouldn't know. I'm the only one in the office. Anyway, so yeah, look. We can't say anything more definitive. I have no interest in baseless speculation. I prefer basey speculation. That's what I have made this show all about. But I will say that it doesn't, again, if they're not gonna be upfront, we have to consider possible explanations and use the evidence we have to decide which ones are most likely. This, like, we can't say this means he had or even hints that he had microstrokes. The only thing that hints at that is the fact that he brought it up when nobody else did. But anyway, something was going on. You don't generally have NDAs signed for your random physicals that you apparently pass with flying colors anyway. It's weird. I can't say anything more than it's weird, but I think we can all agree, pretty weird.
And it, yeah, anyway. Non-disclosure agreements is what it stands for those. I think you said it, but just.
Oh, sorry, did I not say that?
I think you did, yes, but I just that's so that people know it's non-disclosure agreements.
Sure, sure. We know from the polls this week that a few weeks out from the election, Donald Trump is not in a great spot. He is trailing Biden nationally by 8 to 14 points or so. He's trailing him in the swing states, and that definition is starting to be stretched a little bit, 5 to 7 points. It's not exactly looking the way that Donald Trump would want, but we've talked about that before. Let's go a layer past Donald Trump, and that is to other Republicans that are apparently getting more and more frustrated at Donald Trump for dragging them down. So we have these new polls where he's apparently alienating women, seniors, suburbanites, even though he's made that a big focus of his campaign. He's trailing, blah, 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 all that stuff. But it's even left Biden doing well in states like Montana, Kansas, and Missouri, where he's not supposed to be. Now, that does not mean that he's gonna win those states. That still seems unlikely, but that potentially gives a boost to other Democrats running in those states. And when we look at this is a map of Senate seats that are considered to be in play. This is a lopsided year favoring the Democrats. You know, in 2 or 4 years, it's gonna be bad the other way. But anyway, get ready for that. So you can see that they are playing the defensive in a lot of places, including places that they did not expect they'd have to. And we have some indications starting to trickle out from Republicans that they are really feeling this Trump thing. Senator John Cornyn, running for re-election, has apparently, this is according to the New York Times, lamented privately that Mr. Trump is stuck in the low 40s in polling, holding back other Republicans. That's according to people familiar with his comments. Now, he's still up by like 8 points against MJ Hagar. So he's still got a race. He's probably gonna do just fine, but he's a little bit worried. And notably on Monday, he said to the Houston Chronicle editorial board that Trump let his guard down and said his diagnosis should be a reminder to exercise self-discipline. That is as close as John Cornyn will ever get to criticizing Donald Trump. And it comes as this race is getting a little bit closer.
Brett, yeah. I mean, Martha McSally wouldn't even, you know, speak his name. It was like, are you proud of your support for Donald Trump? She's like, I bet I love tennis. Do you want to talk about tennis? Can we talk about literally anything else in the universe? I don't know. Is that fine? So that is one of those things that is a sign when even the rats that are still on this ship are like, I'm gonna find a lifeboat. And yeah, it's because he digs such a hole. And Trump has been able to do some things throughout his presidency that most politicians wouldn't dare do for two reasons. One, they are playing by the rules that are set out for them, which are necessary to follow to conventionally rise through the ranks of politics. You don't want to rock the boat in any specific way. There's a particular kind of crappy you can be on the Republican Party that's rewarded. And then, well, the other thing is that he's been able to shout it out and do all these horrible things that every other politician in their right mind would shy away from. And they've always kind of wanted to do it. But he's gotten away with it and they kind of have stuck around because they know the alternative is he's gonna start yelling at them. At this point, getting yelled at by Trump seems to not be as risky and suicidal politically as it used to be. Those things that if you've been following politics for a while, if you haven't been following politics, they might seem like whispers. But if you have been following politics, this is like them screaming, it needs to end. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad that you brought up the change in whether it's actually good or bad for them, because I have a question for you in a little bit that actually is related to that. I want to run through just a couple of other examples of some concern and some distancing from Donald Trump. So we've got in South Carolina, Republicans have apparently grown deeply concerned about Senator Lindsey Graham's reelection campaign, and Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, has had several sobering conversations with Mr. Graham. According to Republicans familiar with the discussions, they've also apparently taken the National Republican Party, the equivalent of the DSCC. They're taking a more direct role. Yes, exactly. They're taking a more direct role in the campaign, according to the New York Times reporting. Now we've also got Senator Susan Collins, who said about Donald Trump taking off his mask as soon as he got back to the White House. I couldn't help but think that sent the wrong signal. I did not think it's a good example at all. And she started airing an ad this week that urges voters to vote for her, quote, no matter who you're voting for president. That's not good for Trump. I mean, I doubt he cares, but he'd like to do well in Maine. He could use Maine potentially.
Well, Maine divvies it up.
Exactly. So he really wants those votes. On Thursday, in a conference call with a group of lobbyists, Mitch McConnell vented that the party's Senate candidates are being financially overwhelmed because of small dollar contributions to Act Blue, the online liberal fundraising hub. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. I would argue, Mitch, you're the one that decided you wanted to try to push through an anti-choice Supreme Court justice in the month leading up to the election. Did you not think that was gonna lead to a lot of donations? And it did. We know that as soon as RBG died, tons of money was flooding into Act Blue. This is on him as much as anyone else.
Yes. And so that's one aspect of it, the fundraising. That's something that reliably throughout history, Republicans can rely on two sources of fundraising. One, giant companies, so do the Democrats. And then also, someone's trying to take your guns, please give money to someone now. Those things have not been able to resonate in this cycle. A lot of Republicans are disillusioned. A lot of independents have only one choice, really. And if they want to be able to sleep at night, and they've all seemed to come around, at least during COVID, anything can happen between now and the end of the race. So don't get complacent. I would say run up the score if you can. Keep, totally. you know, keep a full list of things that Trump has done, all the way from if people talk to you about it. You know, he hasn't paid anything in taxes. He was broke until The Apprentice. So this whole idea that he was he's a successful businessman is obviously wrong. He's good on coronavirus. No, he's not. It's in his White House and he keeps doing stuff to get more coronavirus on people. It just doesn't make sense anymore. I wish it did. I want to help you feel good about voting against him. That's how it is, as opposed to shaming.
Let me ask you a question though, related to this. So if you read this reporting, and the New York Times has a great article, but there's like, you're starting to see a lot of articles about like the rumblings about Trump. And you had Ben Shapiro tweeting like, if he loses to this like flailing 70-year-old guy, it's all on him. Like that is distancing to the extent that a grifter on the right will do. And they talk about things like him calling off the negotiations, which he's now trying to backtrack on. But one opportunity that he sort of ditched, but might be able to reverse, is he said he doesn't want to do the debate. He doesn't have many more great opportunities to turn this thing, other than announcing a sham vaccine, which he'll do. But he doesn't have a lot of opportunities to really turn this thing around. Theoretically, the Republicans would want him to backtrack and say he'll do the virtual debate to give them at least a chance that something happens that benefits them. But at this point, do they want him doing that debate? Or is that only likely to make things worse for them, worse than they already are?
I think they probably do want him to do the debate, because for a couple of reasons. One, debates typically tighten things. That's what happens. The front runner loses ground in a debate as long as the person they're debating against doesn't totally poop the bed. But the other reason is expectations are now super duper extremely low for the president. The only other side is
that's true.
And if you exceed expectations, you're a winner. And that's what's so weird about Trump's entire life, really. But the other thing is, I think the Biden campaign's done a pretty good job, and they need to do more of it, of just saying like, I don't know if he's sick. And that's a problem. He's self-diagnosed, but he won't tell us anything. So I want to follow the CDC guidelines. This debate is within the window of when he should be self-quarantined based on when he told us he was sick. So now Trump's in a ton of terrible places that he's put himself in. Either he is not able to do this debate, or he was unable to do the last debate. Either way, Biden's got a talking point. The other thing is, Trump backed out of this debate. If he comes back into this debate, well, Biden has given up, or Trump has just like tucked tail and decided he's, you know, hat in hand or whatever. He's come back to, he's abandoned his position that he thought was one of strength, but really was just a cage he put himself in.
He thought that it would look strong. That's a weird choice. I don't see how you could think that. Yeah, it doesn't read to me. I don't know why you would make that assumption.
I do want to say the other things is like, we're talking about electoral leads as perceived from polling. There's a lot that, I mean, you remind people of every day that the Republicans are doing to subvert the electoral process. So essentially in South Carolina, they see that Lindsey Graham has a rough go of things. They are actively trying to throw out votes there. All over the country, Texas, it's close, it's within three. Abbott has restricted the total number of places you can drop off your ballot early. There's tons of litigation about how long after after election day they'll still accept ballots coming in, due to things Trump's actively done to make the process of mailing ballots slower. In Florida, they've had a decision recently where, like today, where in the last hours of the voter registration period, the server crashed and people couldn't do it online. And they were like, well, why don't we just extend it for the number of hours it was down? A judge stepped in and was like, no, that's fine. So we can measure that there are thousands of people who wanted to vote who can't, not to mention what has happened in Florida since the referendum, where they said that if you've paid your debt to society in terms of serving your time, that felons can once again vote. That was voted on as a 2/3 majority of people in Florida, but Trump and his cronies have made it impossible for Floridian ex-felons to vote, because they essentially want to run a poll tax, because they know they would get devastated. So already I've enumerated hundreds of thousands of votes that won't count So we need That's to true. Run up the score by hundreds of thousands of votes, not to mention the disparity, the skew away from actual democracy the Electoral College itself presents.
Yeah, you're 100% right. There was one of those challenges about whether your ballot had to be received by close of voting or if it could be after went in the direction of close of voting. So that's bad news. The good news is that what they did in Texas, the one drop off point per county, they tried to do the same thing in Ohio and that was overruled. They're going to have more than one in some counties. Doesn't mean you're going to have great access. So again, we're not in the final couple hours of voting. We have weeks to go. Don't wait until the final couple of hours. You should have already voted. You certainly should have registered if you couldn't vote yet. So I'm gonna do what I did yesterday. I want you to type in if you've already voted, put voted in the chat. If you've already registered but not voted, put registered. And then go and vote. So the next time I do this, you can type voted. Won't that feel good? Quick on the trigger finger there, hadn't even introed it. But anyway, yes, it is time for the garbage people of the week. We've got Trashy here. Trashy's hungry. He's gone a whole week since he got some paper. But Brett, I think you should go first. Who is your garbage person of the week?
My garbage person of the week. Let me finish it really quick. It's Charlie Kirk. I had a plan to draw him, but anyways, here's his face. It's a golf ball, perfectly spherical golf ball. This is Charlie Kirk. In the wake of the vice presidential debate, Charlie Kirk, who isn't on Twitch, but he definitely twitches, decided he was going to take an opportunity to respond to Kamala Harris's characterization of judge appointments by the Trump administration as racist. So this is Charlie Kirk trying to call out Kamala Harris in one of the most ridiculous ways I've ever seen.
Play tape of Vice President, the person running for the Vice President, Senator Harris, I should say, who makes such an chilling comment, not one of them black, as if skin color matters. She's a racist. Play it.
That of the 50 people who President Trump appointed to the Court of Appeals for lifetime appointments, not one is black?
Not one is black. Who cares? What is the significance right now, Senator Harris, of a nominee being black? What does that mean? What does that matter? Can you build out specifically and totally why a nominee's skin color matters? If there is one philosophical distinction between the Democrats and Republicans, between President Trump and Joe Biden, is this: they care about skin color, we don't. That's it. If you vote for one thing in November, it's Joe Biden cares about the color of your skin. Donald Trump doesn't. What you're really looking at is a post-racial colorblind agenda and a racist pseudo KKK agenda that Joe Biden is embracing. And I say that intentionally. We have not seen this kind of race baiting since Grand Wizards were allowed on cable television when Mike Wallace was interviewing them 40 years ago.
There's so much right with what he said. I didn't think of until that moment. It's just like
there's a lot there.
Like someone saying that something doesn't matter to him while he's like flinging stationery around the room. That doesn't matter to me. Look at me not letting this matter to me.
It doesn't matter. It's not. Here's the thing. Could you go back to me? So it is. It would be one thing if he were to like actually be so mad that he flings it. The reason that like I only found out he had a show like literally 3 weeks ago. And apparently a lot of people watched it, even though he is objectively bad at this. It was, you know what? Like it was this fake performative thing of throwing a pencil impotently onto the table. And his face is twitching the entire time. Yeah. He looks like he's covered in thick, sticky sweat. Why does he, like it's a hostage video, but that's his show in his studio. Why is it so bad?
This is mean. I'll say that and I'm the bad guy, but like his face is so, his head is so big. Why are all his facial features vying for the exact center point on it?
Well, that's
like, why are they invading the center? There's so much, he looks like, I don't know if you saw Dick Tracy, And when he gets mad, they all scrunch together. So that's the end of the mean portion of it. Yeah. Just in terms of philosophy, all she's pointing out is like, dude, if you only appoint white judges, it seems like the color of their skin does matter to you.
Yep.
It seems like all of these things are coming together where you are just picking judge appointments and only considering the whites. And all she's saying is like, let's just look at and see what happened. She didn't say anything else. And if you want the answer to why skin color might be something that we need to look at is like, well, if the scoreboard is this skewed, maybe there's something wrong with the system. And then when you look at the reason that those judges were appointed, if you want to adopt his framing, all the decisions they're making, especially in the electoral system, are specifically geared toward disenfranchising black people. And the thing that I have that is, I guess, colorblind, if you want to adopt his like 1991 phrasing of like, you know, PSAs, is that I want the vote to be colorblind. I want it to be utterly blind. I just want to make sure that everybody, no matter who they are, if they are of voting age and eligible, are able to vote, period. And all of these white people or whoever that are appointed by the Trump administration are actively making it so that if you are black, that does affect your situation in life and continues to do so. That's what the problem is with his side. The one philosophical difference is it doesn't matter to us. It does matter. And that's why you behave the way you do.
Yeah, that and probably like my heart actually goes out to him. He's at some point going to announce some sort of substance thing. He's apparently not ready to. I understand it's a difficult thing, but there's something going on. Nobody's that twitchy and sweaty for no reason.
I love his setup because it always looks like he just lost a playoff game. And he's explaining why his team sucks.
Yeah, it
and
he's does look like that.
He's just expecting him to go, playoffs? Playoffs?
Totally.
When they get close on it, like this is like the sports desk. It's not too dissimilar from our desk. It's fine. But when it comes to like his one shot, he's like, it's weird because he has infinite money. But this shot here is like, we should have played better defense. They are who we thought they were.
Practice? Can I just say too? That totally looks like that, but also that backdrop seems to imply that they believe that Charlie Kirk is so unengaging that people will be actively forgetting who he is while looking at his face and will need to be reminded literally anywhere else they look, and they will look away because watching him directly is an uncomfortable thing. They'll need to see what his name is literally everywhere they look.
The worst part is it's a monitor. It's digital. You can change that at any time.
Oh, he should change.
They have decided that looks good.
Yeah.
Me, I'd have to by the way, move to get a new background.
Yeah. If you're curious about whether you are a stooge for a racist party, if when it turns out that they appoint 50 judges and none of them are black, and someone has the gall to point out, hey, that seems wildly not representative of the country. And then you respond by saying, that's as bad as lynching. Maybe you're a racist party. Maybe you're not the good guys when you say that a person's saying, hey, this seems weird. Could we look into this? You're a Nazi. You're a KKK.
Meanwhile, while Charlie Kirk, if you're going to talk about platforming, meanwhile, Charlie Kirk. Fox has platformed the biggest white supremacists in modern memory, Tucker Carlson, and all of those right wing white nationalist psychos are super happy to jump at the platforming that Joe Rogan gives them. So give me a freaking break about platforming.
Yeah, and also, you know, I hesitate. I'm not going to show the picture because, you know, people make fake things. It doesn't seem fake. Supposedly going around right now, Charlie Kirk posed in a photo with one of the terrorists that was going to try to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer. We'll see. Let Snopes get at that and make sure that it's true. So take that with a gigantic grain of salt. If it does turn out
to
be true,
exactly.
I look forward to his apology for that. Sure. And look, I just want to get out in front of, if you're a Charlie Kirk fan, I swear to God, our producers are not running a filter that shrinks his face. That's actually what it started like. I just don't come at us with that. It's not our fault. My garbage person of the week. And it had to be him. I'm sorry. The only debate was for what reason, and there were many, but Donald Trump is going to feed trashy today because Donald Trump, and yes, that's what he looks like, he's garbage. And the reason that he's garbage today is that our country had something very scary happen in the past 24 hours. It was when we found out that a bunch of domestic terrorists were going to kidnap and presumably execute a governor as part of their attempt to overthrow a state government. Nobody, none of that should be true. That should never happen in our country, but it nearly did. The FBI stopped it, thankfully. And when Donald Trump, who we showed you why we believe he in fact directly inspired this with his calls to liberate Michigan, when he found out about this, he thought that the villain in that story I just told you about was the kidnapping target. Because he tweeted this: Governor Whitmer of Michigan has done a terrible job. She's the victim of a kidnapping plot. She could have died. Her family could have died. He starts off, she's done a terrible job. She locked down her state for everyone except your husband's boating activities. The federal government provided tremendous help to the great people of Michigan. My Justice Department, it's not his, it's ours. And federal law enforcement announced today that they foiled a dangerous plot against the governor of Michigan. Rather than say thank you, she calls me a white supremacist. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, and then we go on to the third one. I do not tolerate any extreme violence, even though I'm excusing it right now. Let's see. Governor Whitmer, open up your state, open up your schools, open up your churches. So she was nearly murdered by domestic terrorists. He starts off by saying that she's done a terrible job. And then he repeats the things he said to get people to want to kidnap and murder her.
That was his response to the plot. The only thing he didn't repeat was liberate Michigan.
Yeah, he doesn't say who did it. He doesn't say why they were gonna do it.
He also blamed.
He like said Antifa's bad. No, wasn't Antifa. It was racist right wingers who you whipped up into a frenzy by talking about that we need to liberate things. The Fox News did week after week after week after week of trying to get them to do what they did, and thankfully they were stopped. And he makes her the villain in that. And then he sends a signal to the militia members that haven't yet been caught and says, she needs to open up the state. She needs to open up the schools, even the churches. It's on her because she locked those things down. Thankfully the FBI stopped this one plot, but there are almost certainly other terrorists out there that are gonna be plotting as well. And he just gave a wink and a nod to them. Absolute utter garbage.
Yep. And It's so sad. And then he's like, the Biden campaign refuses to condemn these, and he says Antifa anarchists and looters and mobs. It's Trump wants to vilify a group of people that is not affiliated with the activity. And Biden is completely, and the reason that Trump might not have noticed is it happened so quickly. Biden was like, I condemn violence, I condemn looting. I condemn people who have shot folks for no reason. Like, he does it very quickly and instinctively because that's what you should do. But Trump is the one who took 3 days to condemn white supremacists after a debate. It took him 3 days to do that. Like, that's what's so insane about all, one of the many things that's so insane about all this.
Yeah, there are many. And like, sometimes this segment, like, the segment's supposed to be lighthearted, but if like it doesn't, like throwing a piece of paper of the president into trashy doesn't feel good enough when he is trying to inspire follow-up terrorist plots. We have to get rid of him. That is literally the only thing we can do. He'll still have a media outlet and you know, willing to bring him on every day, but at least he won't be president. That's the safest we can be.
Well, that's the thing. And then also anyway, he's trying to lump everyone in with like those who do bad things. Well, all right, Trump, it seems like, what was it? There's a report like 38 out of the 40 people killed recently or attacks recently were from white terrorist plots in America, essentially the equivalent of this, were killed by right wingers. So why don't you go out there and distance yourself and condemn every right winger in America, all your entire base. That's what it's all about. You have personally encouraged many, many acts of violence that have been carried out. Period.
Yeah, 100%.
So you need to condemn all that. And I think everybody knows that that's the case. So
Well, what they don't yet know is the Dragon Squad Garbage Person of the Week. So let's turn to that now. 13,000 of you voted by going to the community tab on the YouTube channel on Thursday. And let's see, we've got at number one with 15% of the vote, the Trump family for refusing to wear masks at last week's debate. Second place, 11% Trump's doctor for putting the president's image over the truth. 5% Mike Pence for refusing to answer questions on climate and abortion. And 2% Katie Miller for making fun of Harris's requests for a safe debate. Those are all great answers. Trump family wins it there. They certainly deserve that. Don Jr. held a packed indoor rally of maskless people yesterday. Absolutely insane behavior. The true garbage thing, though, is the all of the above option, because it got 67% of the vote. So we got to take it away. There's just, that doesn't work. That's too much of the vote. So we're going to go another week without it and see what happens. But at some point, we have to decide. Trashy needs to eat, so we need to decide. Any thoughts, Brett?
I've shared all of them. I just want to give great positive reinforcement to the activity on Twitch, specifically Anastasia Rose for the slug that is Charlie Kirk, Bad Rongo helping families.
Nice.
And then everyone who voted and vindicated me, including Tony Starks, who resubscribed for 5 months, or resubscribed with Prime is a 5 month streak. But yeah, I do. I just want to say, I'm glad that as I see from Sophie, much to happy half hour's chagrin, 1,300 followers on Damage Report's Instagram in such a short time. That is wildly. I want to be magnanimous and kind from Happy Half Hour. We are Happy Half Hour, so we are happy for you. I do want to say that people didn't think it was possible, but it was made possible and proven achievable today due to the Dragon Squad and its fantasticness.
Thank you. Thank you. Everyone, thank you for doing that. Follow Happy Half Hour as well. And maybe that will get Brett to start posting again. Brett, thank you.
You're right. I don't have enough responsibilities.
That's true. Brett, am I doing Common Room tonight?
No. Common Room tonight?
Interesting.
Wait. No.
No, it's fine. Who's on it?
Common wife. Put your face on. Right? Common Room bookings. Let me gonna just check. What's the 9th? It's J.R., Jesus, and Asher.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
And then the next week is Brett Ehrlich, Bree Esrig, Samantha Shocker, and Jason Carter, a Pop Trigger reunion.
What? That sounds like fun. That's gonna be awesome. Well, Brett, thank you for joining us today. It was a lot of fun. Well, we covered a lot. Go and be well.
Thank you, sir. And thanks, Trollpy, for the 5 tier 1 subs. I said it before you could.
Thank you. With the social movement of 2020, all of these conversations that people are having about what our role in society should be, how we should advocate for the sort of country we want to live in, I am very excited to welcome to the show the author of Raising Our Hands, an expert on the women's vote, Jenna Arnold. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks.
Tell us about your book and about this conversation that you want to have about women and their connection to everything that's going on.
Specifically white women, if we could be pointed in making sure that I have had a very specific life experience as a white woman growing up in the suburbs. In sort of a middle class home, you know, trying to find my ways up the organizational ladder, and being ignorant largely for most of it to the state of the rest of the world, and then stepping in to do some of the social justice work in the past 5-10 years of my career, and hearing things pretty consistently from my friends representing marginalized communities who have been on the front lines for decades, saying things, whispering things along the lines of like, hey, can you go get your people, or, you know, white folks don't understand their power, proximity, privilege. And I always had thought, at least in the earlier years, that that applied to the other white folks and not me. And it wasn't until I was sort of standing on stage as one of the organizers of the Women's March in 2017, looking out at a sea of a tremendous amount of pink hats, that I qualitatively noticed that it felt like most of those people wearing those hats were white women. I tried to take that observation and back it into the statistic that 54% of American white women voted for Trump in 2016, and then align that with my life and how I was raised. I was raised by well-intended, good Christian white women who also pulled the lever in the direction and on behalf of the candidate that I knew just contradicted so many of the values that they had instilled in me and they likely represented. And so I was trying to like reconcile this very specific role around this very specific demographic, and I couldn't do it. And I had this moment where I was like, okay, who is talking to white women? They are the largest voting bloc in the country. They will be through 2060, likely controlling 56 Senate seats even then. They control 85% of the US economy. They're responsible for raising, largely speaking, the next generation of white men. You know, who is understanding this demographic from a statistical, numerical perspective, and also trying to understand what their relationship is with themselves and civics and voting patterns and their breadwinning husbands and those Barbie houses that we were raised in. And so I had this moment where I was like, okay, I'm ready to go and like understand this. And I picked my head up like a meerkat and I was like, where's the organization? Where's the listserv to join? Where do I donate money? And it was crickets. So I set off to ask some existential questions to women across the country. And I've been doing that for the past 3 or 4 years.
Wow. So yeah, there's a lot of directions we can go in. I mean, so as you're asking those existential questions, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about 2020, obviously, but you mentioned there that 2016, 54% of white women ended up supporting Donald Trump, even though it would seem as an outsider to the community of white women, it seems like he gave them some reasons to be a little bit suspicious of him. So as you were having those conversations around the country, what were some of the explanations you were hearing as to why they went along with this?
Listen, I think it's gonna take us 25 years to unpack that particular lever pull in 2016. But there are some universal truths that became pretty familiar throughout my questioning of this demographic related to that decision. And they were the things that we've heard for years, which is I've always voted down ballot. My father and my husband, we've always voted Republican, more fiscally conservative. And I just wanted it to be over then. So I just did what I always do. Or sometimes women would say things like, well, there really wasn't a perfect candidate. So I just didn't vote at all. And, you know, I'm not pardoning anybody's behavior, but it's also true that polls were suggesting she didn't need to pay attention. She didn't need to show up in ways that were requiring everybody to show up, at least coming into this particular presidential election. And the truth is women, middle class and above white women, their proximity to the patriarchy and white supremacy has benefited them. It's benefited their children. So they're going to err on that side, even though they might not define it with the same language that I just did, because they believe it is in their best interest to do that.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. And you already sort of started to answer this, but like, so you came away from that, from those conversations, believing that to some extent, whether I guess whether they acknowledge it, you know, vocally or not, they get that you know, going with Donald Trump, going with the Republicans is going to benefit them because they're white. It's going to benefit their kids. Did any acknowledge that explicitly?
No.
What did they say that gave you that impression?
No one was able to articulate it that way. I wonder though if I asked those same questions today, how many of them would be able to use language that anti-racist scholars have been using for decades, like white supremacy, patriarchy, you know, gender, disability, you know, all of the kinds of the dictionary, so to speak, to sort of split the hairs. But no, it was often like, listen, I'm raising the children. My husband is working. He's paying attention to headlines. And so I'm just assuming that the decisions he's making is in his best interest. And because of my relationship with him, I would use the term proximity to power and patriarchy. Because of my relationship with him, I would you know, follow suit. Now, rarely were any of them like, I'm deferring to my husband. Nobody would say that. But studies would suggest this linked fate, which is that whatever is in his best interest is ultimately in her best interest. And sometimes she would say things like, oh no, I'm the boss of our life. I'm in charge of the house. I drive, you know, I drive all of the big decisions. But wherever there's a moment for Americans, particularly American women, to have doubt in their processing of information and their decision making, insecurity is going to end up playing a really important role. So aside from the decisions related to 2016, and I did spend in most of the conversations that I was having, I wasn't analyzing the Trump vote per se. I was trying to go much higher, like a much higher perspective. And so asking existential questions like, what are you willing to fight for besides your kids? Or what stereotype about you is true? Or how has America failed you? And so it was in those questions that I saw a pattern that was jarring. But again, it has been reflected in the poets and the activists for generations that have said things, you know, when white folks stop hating themselves, we won't need a racist, segregated system, when we don't need to displace self-hate on somebody else or another people or another idea or concept, when we can make room for battling our own self-worth, or when we can find greater you know, love for oneself. And I hate to get all sort of Gandhi in here because it feels cheesy, and it took me a while to really understand, you know, what that meant. But I did see so much insecurity and self-doubt among this demographic that it was easier to opt out of participating in these difficult conversations, a sort of moral ambiguity when it's hard to navigate a complicated subject, right? You know, like if you only have $5, do you give it to food or education for a child in need? And because it's like, I don't know how to figure that out, I'm just not going to, and go back to my Netflix series. It's hard. It's really hard. And so heading into this presidential, when we're further apart than ever before, and you know, I think everyone's saying that, but it's so overwhelming to think like, well, what is the best economic plan for the collective? And what is the best climate plan for the collective? And people are still getting sick with masks, but masks probably also work too. And so you have nothing but a tremendous amount of contradictions and variables that are a bit unsorted and chaotic. And that runs the risk of people being like, I just can't figure this out. I'm going to go back to my Instagram or Pinterest feeds, which like I want to resort to all the time too.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. So we've been mostly talking about 2016. Let's talk now a little bit about 2020. You know, Donald Trump is mostly the same person. The Republican Party hasn't changed a ton since 2016. It's sort of consolidated around Trumpism. We do have Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as our nominees right now. And we've had several years of, I mean, you pointed out, you know, your involvement obviously with the Women's March. We've now had years of people being involved in these different movements and hopefully learning over time. Do you think that, are white women different politically or in their understanding of their connection to these different longstanding movements that haven't necessarily involved them or been remotely about them? Has there been a learning evolving process over the past four or so years?
Absolutely. In ways that I think are going to be astounding to pollsters after the election, right? I mentioned this earlier, white American women decide who become president of the United States. I would argue because of that power, their economic power, their cultural power, they're one of the most influential demographics on the planet, and they don't know it until now-ish. And what happened after 2016, because there was a freedom to tap out, because it was like, hey, HRC had it in the bag, and yes, isn't this so charged, and no one wants to be around this, and let's get this over with. And then suddenly the world was proved wrong. And we saw the cultural cancer festering in ways that said, oh, wait a second, I can't just be focused on the individual. I actually have to step into this collective work that so many people have been requesting of us for so long. And so I would say there's been a combination of things. I mean, you have the shocking results of 2016. A week later, you have the Muslim ban. You have, and you saw and you saw friends and family taking to the streets in ways that we haven't seen in decades. Then we had separation at the border, and every woman, I don't care where they fell politically or religiously, was like ready to throw punches. Then you had Kavanaugh, Me Too movement, and women were starting to question their relationship with the men in their lives. And what I mean by that is everyone is believe survivors and are anti-rape until it's your son, and then it turns into, well, how short was her skirt and hat? Did she really say no? And so there's this sudden shifting of, wait, I have to rethink my relationship with men and power in my life. And then you saw just this continued snowball of the administration's behavior, the fear of COVID. Women are juggling virtual learning and holding down jobs. Like, it's just, there's no living in your cul-de-sac and being able to protect yourself in that bubble that privilege has afforded us for many decades. And so there is, ears are perked higher than they've been in presidential elections, I can say at least, for my entire life, and I would argue ever. My hypothesis based on my math is that if we moved 4% of white women in 4 swing states, we'd get the Oval back. And I think, I'm like actually scared to even put it out in the universe because I haven't said this publicly, but I think we're going to see the numbers move in double digits in some states and move pretty significantly even in red states, right? When you have 100 million Americans who did not vote, who do not vote because they can't be bothered, so many of them are now ready to step up and step in. Mm. I would have said 3 weeks ago that there weren't any undecided. And I actually think there's more swing voters today than there were 3 weeks ago, because I think more white men who were like in the pinkish reddest section, who were like fiscally conservative, but really just don't want to hear him anymore after that presidential debate. I think they're shifting a little bit more purple. So I think you're going to see white women showing up in droves. I think they're going to do what's needed. My question to them, to me, to us is, what are we doing on November 4th? Because yeah, this work isn't done just because we potentially saved a sinking ship. Recognizing that I don't believe the election gets called on the 3rd, and we all should normalize that if it takes 9 months to count ballots, then we have to take 9 months to count ballots. I'm not in this for a 4-year term. I'm in this for 300-year preservation of a country. Just, you know, as an analogy that white women just have so much work they have to do.
Yeah. Well, and maybe potentially related to that. So you listed a number of the sort of lowlights of America over the past few years that I think activated a lot of people to get what's going on and want to change things. And you're predicting a big swing in that vote. Like, I know that women are far more in favor of the Biden-Harris ticket than they, in comparison to Trump, than they were in 2016. I honestly don't know the numbers for white women specifically. So to what extent is it those things that you've already listed? And to what extent is it? I mean, you said one of the questions you asked these women while you were getting ready to write your book was, how has America failed you? Mm-hmm. Is there something about the Biden-Harris ticket that represents a significant shift, or are they putting forward policies that could address some of the ways that America has failed these women? How does it balance out between the awful things that we all have happened over the past few years and what Biden and Harris represent as an alternative?
Great question. Also worthy of a PhD. A couple of things. One, when I ask American white women, how has America failed you? There is a hypocrisy in that question itself, because it really hasn't failed white women in the same way it has other women who represent different communities. And I think a lot of white women would like struggle to answer that question. But what is clear now is that American systems, be it governmental, be it these checks and balances that we believe existed, be it this like centering of medicine and science, that there is system flaws, right? And you'll hear them talk about that as it relates to law enforcement. That didn't happen before George Floyd. It just didn't. And while they could say, yes, our incarceration rates are high, and yes, it skews toward black folk, particularly black men, and yes, you know, all of those things, it wasn't until 8 minutes and 46 seconds, bearing witness to that, that they were like, wait a second, this might not be working. And then they see their education. They see, you know, one school district, the kids are in school one day a week, and a school district, you know, a half a mile down the road, the kids are in school every single day. Like, there's just clarity around things not working. And so I think they're suddenly saying, okay, something is broken, both from a systemic and a moral perspective. But I would say, and this is a sweeping statement, I don't think this demographic is stepping into the voting booth because of a policy. I don't think this is a policy-based election. I think this is an identity, a democracy, a hope-based, like a merit, like bringing honor back to that American flag-based decision. And so I don't know if they're like, Biden and Kamala are the ones to get us through. And my message to us, myself too, which is like, there are no heroes here. We're not looking for superheroes. We all are responsible for all of this work. I think they see it as a stopping a boulder falling down a mountain and a reset, and recognizing that a Biden is returning to a very patriarchal, slightly old school system. But what I'm so inspired and grateful to him for is that he's changed his climate policy like 4 times in the past 6 months. I just want a candidate that's movable. And even though he's been in this circus for 4 decades, he's still listening, right? Like 3 years ago, he wasn't talking about implicit and explicit bias in the law, in law enforcement. And now he is, which just goes to show that like he's paying attention. And I think, you know, you see the sarcastic lawn signs of any functioning adult for 2020. Well, it's a little bit like that.
Okay. That's interesting. I don't necessarily disagree. Obviously, I want, you know, our elections to be based on differences in policy, but Donald Trump is, he's something. He's a special case.
He doesn't have policy. Like, what's his policy?
No,
besides just,
no.
Like, protecting his ego. I feel, you know, it's sad to watch any human be so loyal to their ego. And the ones that are going to carry us all through are the ones that are most humble and face their own humility. It's the only way that we're going to be able to step in together too, is being humble and being confused and being vulnerable in the I don't know-ness of what we're going to do next, but I know we can figure it out together.
Okay. There's so much more. I wish we had time to talk about. Maybe we can have a conversation in the near future. But Jenna Arnold, I want to thank you for joining us. The book is Raising Our Hands. Obviously, like fertile ground for conversation there. Very interesting material. Thank you, Jenna, for joining us today on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.